This is Iconic with your hosts JM, Mark, and Nick.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host JM, and with me, as always, are Nick and Mark.
Greetings.
Hello.
We have a great show for you this week. Today we are in Claw Claw Bite covering demons. All of your demon needs right here, how to use them, where they're from, what cool tricks and evil plots they might have in store.
Claw Claw Bite.
So welcome to Claw Claw Bite. Today we're going to be discussing demons, as I said. So what are demons?
Follow-up question. Are demons and devils the same thing? Do they both come from the abyss?
There are 13 different options for where devils come from, but they do not normally. Devils tend to come from hell or Bator. It is much more of a lawful...
Gotcha.
Yeah, they're really different.
Yeah. In that
a lot of people kind of lump them together, but in the game world, traditionally from the Gygaxian world up, they've been different. Different vulnerabilities, different powers.
Yeah, different MOs.
Different outlooks
on
things.
Yeah.
Devils want to conquer and subjugate. Demons just want to devour and destroy.
And they're engaged in the blood war, basically, because they both represent an idealized version of evil. It's this whole chaos and law fighting to a standstill. Yet you don't want either of them to win because they're both evil. So Mark, as the grognard of the group, the old soldier, what can you tell us about the early days of demons being introduced into the D20 world?
Demons in the old world, well, even now, 13th Age, are pretty scary. They were typically mid to high level opponents, had lots of weird powers, resistances. So if you didn't know the first time you met them, you could spend some spells futilely because it doesn't do anything to them. That's one of the things I like about the new 13th Age ones is you have that chart where you roll your random abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not quite the same.
Yeah, so no one's really going to know what's...
They have standard things, but there's extra things that you don't know.
Right.
So and that adds to it because I remember long ago in first edition, fairly new compared to some of the other guys, ran into, and I don't really remember if it was devils or demons, and one of the older players that played for a while, like, oh no, this is what we got to do, bang, 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 to defeat them. Kind of took the surprise from me
out of it
of, oh, use this, you know. And I forget if it was devils or demons, but it was like, use lightning, not this, because they're resistant and that kind of thing. So, but yeah, they're pretty tough. I mean, and they've kind of been around. I mean, if you read Tolkien, you have your Balor.
Your Balor, yeah. Or your Balrog.
The Balrog, as they called it, but it's a Balor. But they were also, like I said, mid to high level. It could get overwhelming because, you know, that whole wildest teleport or chance of teleporting in more demons. Even if they're weaker than me, suddenly you get more, not just one.
Yeah, they do. Most of being extraplanar creatures, a lot of them have the ability to bring in additional versions of them.
Well, that is one of the random abilities that you can roll for whenever you're inserting a demon.
That is true.
Yeah. But it used to be kind of standard with the old
right,
ones.
And
so you really, it was a fine line, and we'll probably talk later about this too, but when you brought demons in against your party, there's a chance you're not just bringing in one, but he's going to gate in some, and they can gate in some. Even if they're lower ones, you know, dretches.
Yeah.
You're fighting more demons, not just the one. So it can really overwhelm your group quickly.
Which plays into the fact that they are a chaotic evil race. They're one of the races that are very closely tied in with the old nine alignment system. And that was part of their nature, that you didn't know exactly what you were facing. Multiple things coming in. We have the random demon ability chart, which is fantastically appropriate for that.
Just a throw out to the DCC Dungeon Crawl Classics. When you create demons, it's a completely random chart.
Oh, nice.
No two demons look the same. The powers aren't the same or anything, so it's not divided. They had to have levels of them, but what they look like and everything's not even like, oh, look, it's a vulture-looking creature. It must be the...
A Vrock.
Vrock, yeah. One of my favorites. Yeah. It's going to look like whatever. So that's kind of neat. And that's what it should be. If it's total chaos, they shouldn't look the same.
Right.
Well, I know that the combat in 13th Age is geared to go by pretty quickly. Would you, as GMs, even if you did not roll the gate ability for the demons, would you, if combat is, you feel, maybe going a little bit too quickly or you want to extend it a little bit longer, still go ahead and just start pulling in extra demons into the fray?
Oh, yeah. I think that especially because it's so thematic, well, and because I'm kind of a jerk GM, I would definitely do that. And it, and again, for me, it is the mechanics reinforcing the narrative. There are infinite number of demons lodged in the abyss. They don't plan. The demon's general plan is keep throwing more things at it till it moves or dies. So I feel like in certain fights, giving demons the gate ability and another random power is well within the narrative. Speaking of the abyss, that's where demons are from. They're an extraplanar creature.
And the great gold worm is plugging the main hole between the abyss and the Dragon Empire.
Right, and the Diabolist is exploiting that large hole to make parallel smaller holes and summoning and binding demons. So you got two icons that are both heavily tied into these creatures. One of them loathes them. One of them loves them.
I was going to say, I thought there was one other icon who had set up his fortress in one of the hell holes.
Oh, and the Crusader.
Crusader, yeah.
Yeah, the Crusader also loathes them as well.
Yeah, but I kind of see it as, I thought about this morning on icons, and I think the Great Gold Worm is the icon. If you look at all the other icons, they've all got an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to do something. The only thing he's doing is saving the world.
Yeah, he
That's
really,
it. He has no other power struggle, not trying to increase, not trying to play somebody. He's plugging the hole to keep demons away. So he's sacrificed himself to do that. It's pretty neat.
Pretty epic, yeah.
Good job, guys.
It seems that while the Great Gold Worm is actively plugging the hole and preventing the hell holes from being created and the demons from escaping the abyss, the Crusader is fighting those that have escaped or who are trying to take over those hell holes that have already been established. And the Diabolist is trying to create more hell holes and release more demons. The things between the Diabolist and the Crusader the Great Gold Worm is like a player in this arena in the background. But the Diabolist and the Crusader seem to be the front and center combatants in the Dragon Empire versus Abyss battle that's taking place. So while the Diabolist is creating hellholes and binding the demons for her nefarious purposes, the Crusader is defeating the hellholes and binding the demons to fight against the other demons.
Right, and that's one of the actual reasons we were looking at demons as a whole show, because with three icons so highly tied to them, demons make a really great campaign enemy, like a reoccurring level up threat. What are they after? What's going on? There are just a ton of ideas out there with the Great Gold Worm, the Diabolus, and the Crusader kind of being your focal points. And then even spinning off in other campaigns, because if the players get involved and do help stop a demon threat, well, remember, the Crusader's only kind of a good guy as long as there are demons to fight. As soon as that's done, he's turning his eyes at the Priestess and the Gods of Light. So you have a lot of ways to go with a campaign.
In your world.
That's right, in my world.
Well, and with the demons having such a chaotic element to it, you can probably pretty easily pit them against any one of the other icons well.
Oh, yeah. Demons make wonderful enemies because you don't have any ambiguity there. They're bad. You need to defeat them. On the other hand, as GM, they make great bosses. And you really got to think outside of normal, what is this, head of the Thieves Guild want? Well, it's probably greed and power. Demons are just so different. You can really stretch what are their goals and how they twist things and people to get their way.
Well, and that makes a really good point as well, Mark, that there's not a lot of ambiguity when you deal with demons. I was thinking of the Pathfinder Wrath of the Righteous adventure path. mm-hmm. where, you know, demons are coming through the world wound, which is kind of like what we have here in 13th Age, a hellhole. They tell you right off the bat, like, no, this is the game for paladins and good people. Because the problem is demons are chaotic evil and they are corrupting, just like devils, but in a, you know, slightly different way. So if you are playing that ambiguous character, GMs, if you have an ambiguous character in a game where demons are your main focus, they're going to pick up on that ambiguity and go after that person.
And if you're really good as a GM, the players won't even know it until it's too late.
That's right.
I hate you, Jam.
The idea is little breadcrumbs until they've eaten the entire pound cake of evil. Well, on page 269 of the main book, there is a brief discussion on hellholes. So hellhole is a place where demons have warped reality and kind of taken over. They're bound. They're usually transformed by the Diabolist or her, you know, or other demons into a hell on earth. One of the things I love about the hellholes is that they can kind of spontaneously develop. So I really like the idea of using this as a campaign loss idea. You had to flee from this fight. You were not able to stop the cultists, and your hometown is now a hellhole. Next adventure is, you know, maybe the Crusader shows up and starts punitive actions on your town because it's a hellhole.
Or against you because you let the hellhole
exactly. We like to refer to that as a cleansing.
That's right. Mark is the representative of the Crusader in this podcast. So what are your thoughts on hellholes as a player, Nick?
I'm glad that they are confined. In the book, it talks about the demons, while some of them want to escape or try to escape, they are, for the most part, bound to the confines of the hellhole. And those few that do escape, if they stay in the immediate area, they will eventually get sucked back in. So I feel like as a player, as I think about the world that I'm playing in, it would be a little bit relieving to know that it's just in this one area, that we can go there, we can explore, combat this hellhole, and then we can escape and not necessarily have them all follow after us. So
for now.
And I mean, and in the sense, you mentioned a campaign loss. If it got to the point where we were going through a hellhole and it got to bad enough that we needed to flee, we could run away and there would be a structure in place for a plausible rest.
He's so idealistic. I see him going into JM's campaign. You go into the hellhole, you get corrupted, and then you flee with a campaign loss.
That's right. Complete side note, but in one of my games, the players found a book that was a demon, and it ended up being basically a demonic meme. If you read it, it imprinted itself in your brain, and you were trying to spread it. You'd show the meme to other people and just visually spread this demonic virus. Something they took out of the hellhole and didn't even realize. But, Mark, as a GM, what are your thoughts on hellholes? How would you use them in the game? What kind of advice could you give to players?
Oh, they're perfect for your adventure setting, you know, for however many sessions you want to go in, either to get something, you know, either something important is there and a hellhole sprouted up, or something was kidnapped and dragged off there. Players have to go in. As it explains in the book, kind of suggests they're not well policed, so you can kind of get in, do stuff. It's hell on earth. So it makes a perfect backdrop to go in there and do adventure-type things.
Well, yeah, and you're not bound by the laws of reality as they exist your world. You can do whatever you want, twist it.
Definitely.
Well, definitely check out the three sample hellholes they give you on page 271.
Well, just one last thought on as far as the hellholes go. Because they vary so much, it would be really easy to scale your gameplay session from a one-shot all the way to a full campaign centered around a particular hellhole. Just let your imagination go.
Oh, man, I just had a great idea, you know, that level one adventure where your group fails to stop some cultists and they turn, I don't know, maybe Axis into a hellhole and the rest of the campaign is a urban crawl through a city-wide hellhole.
So now that we've talked a little bit about what demons are, let's talk about what do they do. As GMs, when you're preparing your game and injecting demons into the session, what are your thoughts behind using them? How would you use them?
Mark, you want to start us off?
To knock the players off their high throne. And sometimes that works. And I'm serious. Sometimes they're breezing through. They're just kicking butt. Think nothing can stop them. Have a Vrock show up. See how quickly they go, wow, we really are mortals.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point there. The lowest demon in the main book, the Dretch and the Imp, they're level 3.
I mean, so at the beginning, first level, that can be tough. Or a couple of them. And they're not mooks, if I remember right.
The Dretches are mooks.
So that's perfect. It wasn't the 13th Age. It was a different system. In fact, it was DCC. Boss fight, wizard, how can I make this guy I'll have him summon the demon.
Yeah.
Summon the demon makes it a whole lot different. They forget about the wizard, and they're like, kill the demon.
That's another really good point. Part of the narrative of kind of the D20 and fantasy gaming in general is the wizard who summons the demon. So they do pair well with just about anything. Well, the first thing to remember about demons is the random demon ability chart on page 209. I've used demons and totally spaced this, and I don't feel like it negatively impacted the encounter, but it wasn't nearly as interesting as it could have been. Because, well, monster abilities in 13th Age, we are advised as GMs to be as open as possible with our players. Hey, this is a mook. Hey, this guy has this resistance. No, you can't use that ability on him yet. His hit points are too high or too low. Demon abilities are supposed to remain, the random ability is to remain secret until the GM uses it.
Some of them that really works to teleport, I like 1d3 times each battle. That's a nice way to pop around and, you think you're engaged and you get a paladin and he's got that special ability where he locks in the enemy. Well, I'm just going to teleport away.
Yeah. Well, and we know you like the gate ability as well.
Yes, yes.
The demonic speed, I think, would be a handy one because it plays off the escalation dice, or the escalation die, and I think that every time a monster interacts with the escalation die, it just adds to the whole overall thematic and climatic battle that's taking place. So the demonic speed allows the demon to take an extra action each turn while the escalation die is 4+. So extra movement, extra attack. Might provide incentive to the players to reduce the escalation die if they can, which adds another element to the gameplay.
Yeah, add something in there into your encounter that allows the players to manipulate that would be very nice.
Bit more
if we only had an episode on that.
If we only had an episode. Oh, wait. I personally really like the demonic speed and the fear aura. I love the way 13th Age handles fear. But as Mark was talking about with their crazy resistances, there is also the resist energy. All energy, 12 or higher, which would put a severe dampening on any arcane or divine users in the party.
Very good.
So you have a large number of demons in the main book, but we also have two that are showing up in 13th Age Bestiary. Mark, you want to talk about those two real quick before we get into the main book?
Sure. One of them is the Cambion Assassin, which I really like, and the Die Book. Did I say that right?
Diebook, yeah, which I really
had a lot
liked.
Of letters I didn't understand in that name. Yeah, I know JM really likes that. In fact, he threw that at us, and it was quite the fight. I like the assassins because they're scaled. They're a little bit different. They're organized. I'm sure we'll do another episode now that we've talked about it earlier with devils, but they're a little more organized and structured, which kind of goes against, to me, what demons are. But you can hire them as assassins. They start out low level. They get their blade. And the more kills, the larger it gets, and it can join their exclusive club. And I like the little description. Most demons want to destroy the world. Cambion assassins seem disturbingly at home here.
They do not have that aura of extraplanarness. They have, it's kind of that scary, the other has become familiar, if that makes sense.
Yes. And to tie into the hellhole, that's probably, where would you go find a Cambion assassin? Probably working out of a hellhole.
Right.
At the Pink Bunny Inn.
Yeah, maybe the reason they're a little more organized is they're half demon.
It could be. It's not completely
mortal component to it.
And they seem to,
or maybe they're under the control of the Diabolist.
In one of my 13th Age games, they've made a deal with a Cambion, and he is a NPC in the party, And I'm like, you realize this is going to backfire on you. No, we got this.
Really?
All right.
Was that a hard sell?
No, it wasn't. It really was not as hard of a sell as I thought it was going to be. They were like, yeah, this seems like a great idea. Okay.
I salute you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
So Diebucks being demons appear to only be one of the options on what they are.
Right.
I thought it worked well.
Yeah, I enjoy the Diebuck as a monster. I think Ash said he created it.
Hmm.
Lots of neat little mechanics in there to dig into, to torment your PCs with. Diebucks have a number of special abilities that you get to pick, and they are tied to the escalation die. So again, if you have any desire to be manipulative with that, feel free to, I would definitely look at, the Diebuck.
Well, there's a number of demons listed in the core book between pages 209 and 215, and of course there are 13 of them. Fancy
yeah,
that.
Go figure.
Ranging from the lowly imp to the mighty Baylor. Looks like there's some of each level, and obviously you can, make minor adjustments if you want to take a higher level demon and put it as a lower level one. You can tweak the numbers a little bit and make it work for you.
If you're coming from any other D20 game, all of these demons should seem very familiar. Two of the demons, the two top-end demons, are level 12 and level 13. So they go even above the PC scale there.
Impossible.
They
turned it up to 11.
That's right. Playing with that whole... demons don't adhere to mortal rules. They're not of this plane, and they should be scary whenever they're encountered.
Did you read the little description on the boar demon, Nalfishni?
Nalfishni.
In the universe of the Nalfishnis come from, they are not ridiculous-looking, puff-bosomed, hairy, big-snouted tuskers with tiny little wings in their backs. Someone pranked the Nalfishni into the cosmos, and they're taking it hard. Now, if you notice on the descriptions, they do really emphasize the random abilities. They do at the beginning. They talk about demons. Random abilities. And as you scroll through descriptions, there's reminder pop-ups that are there saying, hey, use these
mm-hmm.
random abilities. They really try to remind you that really, I think, helps round out, makes them different.
Keeps with the theme, yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, it's like having a Vrock and all of a sudden he gates in. And I think the gate rule is two levels lower. So he's a ninth level. Okay, so he's going to gate in 2 7th levels.
Well, and if you look at some of the nastier specials of the Nalfishni, once per battle, when he's staggered, it can gate in 2d8 hook demon as a quick action. That does not count as its special ability. That just counts as a nastier variant.
Yes, yes.
2d4.
2d.
What did I say?
2d8.
2d8, 2d4. at the point when he's bringing
hook
demons...
I know you would probably use the 2d8, but please don't summon 16 more demons for us to fight.
Hey. You're playing in my Planescape game. These things will show up.
That's right.
And then let's just touch on the big one, the one that is based off the Balrog of Moria, the Baylor. This thing is a beast. 850 hit points. It even has a special ability called Shadow and Flame.
Yep. If he's not tough enough, they actually threw in the nastier special with him. Really?
With the Vorpal Blade? Well, hey, they come standard with Vorpal Blades in other games. So
that's true. That's true. Yeah, so I love demons, and I would just warn GMs, future GMs, just be careful when you throw them at your group, because they can get really nasty if they're not ready for it.
Or don't be careful. Just throw them at your group and see what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I get the impression you try to push players to seriously consider campaign losses. And that's not necessarily criticism.
No, I like the flea mechanic, and we'll actually be talking about that on our next show, because it does give the GM in D20 games since 3.5 or since 3.0, you've had this kind of XP budget mechanic where, okay, a balanced encounter is this, and this is a little bit harder, but don't go above this. And 13th Age gives us really good guidelines on building encounters that are interesting and fun and fairly balanced. But then they also give you this rule that players can just leave, which just to me sounds like encouragement for GMs to push the envelope, make a little bit harder encounter, because it's on the players whether they continue or flee. So demons are one of those campaign monsters that I think deserve a little bit larger of an XP budget, if you will.
Yeah. And by pushing the envelope, if the players decide to stay and they beat the demon or beat whatever the encounter is, then it just adds to the whole heroic element,
the epicness of
the entire game.
It. Yeah. Well, let's talk about uses in campaigns, both at the encounter and at the campaign level. As we said, demons make great monsters for use in your campaigns, no matter where you want to put them. They're chaotic enough that they can just show up as a, you know, in an encounter, allied, or just happening to be in the same place as where your heroes are, or they can be the focus of a huge campaign. Mark, what are your
I like using them also, like I said, for those bosses, because they are extraplanar. Their plans could span generations, you know, versus, yeah. You know, I like using, you know, your thief lord, guildmaster. He's only got so many years to make his plans go. After he's gone, he probably doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Demons around for a long time. So the seed planted 150 years ago might be coming to fruition now, mm-hmm. and you don't realize just how far the web is spread of corruption. So that kind of helps. I like them in that aspect. Lower level ones, you know, as your troops and mooks to get gated in and fight.
Well, I'd say, too, that if you have any players playing the tiefling race, which is half demon or demon tainted, you could potentially use that as a hook to draw out, you know, have them go explore a hellhole as a result of that connection with the player and use maybe that as a connection between the characters the players create and the actual campaign itself, the way of investing them.
Yeah, that's a good point. And if you're planning on having any monster as a long-term campaign focus, tell your PCs early on so that they can either make their one unique thing, or if this develops over the course of a game, change their one unique thing to really tie into that. Not just, you know, the tieflings have a demonic heritage, but, you know, demon's blood is a fairly common fantasy trope. Parents killed by demons,
mm-hmm.
destined to kill demons. I mean, there's a whole lot of them.
Yeah, I just remember my paladin had demon blood.
Oh, I remember.
Started to come out right when we finished, but yeah, kind of the play on it, and could I be corrupted? Who knows? Yeah, like, you know, going back to the canyon too, you know, where if someone that's important has a contract taken out with a canyon, the Great Gold Worm or the Crusader sends you to stop it and protect that person, and maybe they have to go into the hellhole, and it becomes that arc where you maybe uncover other things from it.
Great hook there.
So how would you play it if you had players who wanted to play more evil-type characters, where they would align themselves with the demons?
I'd send them a JM's campaign.
For punishment or for play?
For play.
Well, that is a very interesting question. I would actually probably use devils more than demons, just because...
they like making deals.
Yeah, I like devil. As we'll discuss when we get to the devil episode, I enjoy devils more than I enjoy demons from a GMing perspective. But you would have to have a crazy group of players or a group of players that was willing to let their characters be duped. Because again, as Mark said, you know, devils are out to subjugate. So yes, the world will still exist if the devils win. It will just be firmly under their heel. The demons just want to consume and destroy. So if you've got a group of players who are aligned with that, again, they're either going to have to be amazingly well deceived or nihilists is kind of how I see it. But if I were to have a group who really wanted to align, say, with the Diabolist, like they all wanted positive relations with the Diabolist, I would probably spin it either as the Diabolist is actually doing something necessary by creating these hellholes. They act as like maybe little pressure vents. So that the Great Gold Worm isn't overwhelmed. She's evil for a good cause. Or I would run it as maybe they're trying to redeem the Diabolist. Because she does have this kind of random acts of good twist to her. So I'd allow them to start aligned with the Diabolist, maybe for their own sake. Or, you know, usurping the Diabolist. Maybe they think that those random acts of good are not good for demon kind. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it would be hard. I mean... it's easier if you have one person who wants to do it on the sly,
mm-hmm.
and you have most of the group. But the whole group wants to be more of that kind of bent. Dealing with demons, yeah, I mean, if they're successful,
your campaign's done because the world's done.
Yeah.
I think it would be difficult if you had one player in part, you know, if you just had one player in your group who was trying very blatantly to just seed chaos into the entire campaign and everyone else trying to actually do something with it. I can see how it would be difficult to manage that just from a mm-hmm. actual people mm-hmm. gameplay at the table.
Yeah, that the person who wants to. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions or comments, you can contact us at whitedragon@iconicpodcast.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.